Good morning, all. Well, that's a great start. I will call the meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. And we have a full agenda today, so we'll get going. But first, I wanted to note that this is Representative Hudela's last day with us today on Education Finance. And just want to thank him for his time and commitment. And also knowing nonprofit financing way better than any of us at the table. So thank you so much for your time. And, oh, and I noted from our wonderful CA that you are always on time, and I greatly appreciate that because half the time I'm not. So, thank you. With that, our first order of business is minutes. So Representative Jordan, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for, let's see, March 26th?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have examined the minutes for March 26th, and I would make a motion to approve them.
Thank you. Representative Jordan has made a motion to approve the minutes for March 26th. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The minutes for March 26th are adopted. With that, we'll move on to our first item on the agenda, House File 3682. Representative Khadija Batoon, welcome to the Education Finance Committee again. I believe you have an A5 amendment. And, I'll move the House File 3682 before us. And then I know you have an A5 amendment. I'll move that as well to get the bill in the shape that you would like it to be in when we speak about it. So, members, are there any questions on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say yes.
Aye.
All those in favor say no. The A5 amendment's adopted. With that, House File 3682 is in the shape that we'd like it. And go ahead, Representative Khadija Batoon, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's great to be back in Education Finance. It's been a little while. I am proud to be carrying House File 3682, which is a bill that will standardize health education across our state. It's crucial in ensuring that all students across the state of Minnesota, regardless of their location, receive an education that is consistent, related to not only their own health, but also the well-being of their family, friends, and community. This bill will utilize the rulemaking process, allowing for any and all interested parties to engage the Department of Education. Currently, health education is the only required subject matter for graduation that the content is not standardized. So rulemaking will allow for a transparent process that requires the input of and buy-in of a variety of stakeholders. This includes parents of school-aged children, teachers and faculty throughout the state, school board members, members of Minnesota's business community, representatives from tribal nations and tribal students, additionally with input from the Minnesota Youth Council. After the Standards Committee completes their recommendations, there is ample opportunity for public comment and consideration. Minnesota statute related to this matter specifically stipulates that the standards they create are clear and objective and do not require a certain teaching methodology. Simply put, the process of crafting this bill and carrying it toward eventual implementation is a process that is objective and transparent and relies on important checks and balances while being open to the public at key junctures. Finally, I would like to point out three key points. As I mentioned, standardizing a subject matter doesn't require specific teaching styles or methodologies. It sets the learning destination for students in Minnesota, but local units are still responsible for determining how students reach that destination. School districts and charter schools will still determine how their students meet these developed standards by developing specific courses and instruction. This is the case for every subject matter in Minnesota that is currently standardized. While health is the only required subject matter that's not standardized, there are a couple of topics that we have put into statute that are required to be covered, and then there are others that are encouraged to be covered. So my hope in introducing this bill and moving through the rulemaking process is that we're able to engage outside and external experts in addition to important stakeholders within the education community and families and the other stakeholders that I mentioned earlier. But the bill does not change that the health is still a required subject in order to graduate. That's the case across the state and will remain so. This change, the change that is offered in this bill is that every student, regardless of the size of their school or the location of their classroom, be taught consistent and important topics about the well-being of themselves and others. So, Madam Chair, at this point, I would be happy to listen to our testifiers, and then I stand for questions.
Thank you so much. With that, we have Dr. Eileen Crespo, if you'd like to join us. And as you get settled, just please state your name for the record and what organization you're with, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Eileen Crespo. I have the honor of serving as the president of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Our chapter represents over 1,000 pediatricians in the state. We advocate for the health, safety, and well-being of our patients, Minnesota's children. I'm here to testify in favor of House File 3682. The bill aims to improve the academic standards for Minnesota students to include elements necessary for a well-rounded health education. We are not doing a good job preparing our children to live healthy, thriving lives. Kids today are facing multiple challenges to their mental and physical health, and the earlier we can teach them about how to take care of their own health and well-being, the better. In my nearly 30 years working as a pediatrician in Minnesota, I've seen increased rates of mental health concerns, such as depression and anxiety amongst adolescents, higher rates of eating disorders, childhood obesity, and diseases such as type 2 diabetes among school-aged children, as well as increased rates of bullying and exploitation. In the absence of valid health education, kids are turning to the internet and social media, which can often present them with methods of self-harm, unhealthy weight loss, and unrealistic body standards. Additionally, Minnesota's kids need to be educated about how to live a healthy life in the year 2024 and beyond. In a world filled with access to vaping and cannabis products marketed toward children, where every child has multiple social media accounts, and where any child who's old enough to type can expose themselves to all the information, misinformation, and open communication of the internet, we need to consciously do better by our kids. This bill would help ensure children and families from every corner of the state will receive consistent education related not only to their own health, but that of their family and community. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to help answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Next up is Pogi Del Rosario. Thank you for being with us today. As soon as you get settled, please state your name for the record and the organization you're with, and then you can proceed.
Good morning, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. My name is Pogi Del Rosario, and I am one of the prevention program coordinators at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, or MNCASA. MNCASA's vision is that of a world free from sexual violence, in which all human beings are treated with dignity and respect, and communities are transformed through safety, healing, and partnerships. Our vision is directly in line with the contents of this bill, and today we are pleased to support House File 3682. We want youth across the state of Minnesota to have access to education that provides the knowledge and skills to make informed decisions that will positively impact them throughout their lifespan. MNCASA has convened over 100 Minnesotans committed to this cause. The Health and Well-being Education Standards Workgroup includes advocates, health educators, community members, parents, and those who would be most impacted by these standards, students. It is imperative to listen to and uplift youth voices and their experiences. MNCASA is dedicated to the primary prevention of violence. Primary prevention is taking steps to stop violence before it can occur. These health standards would build foundational skills in effective communication and character development, which are primary prevention strategies. This bill would facilitate collective community efforts to prevent harm and center positive health outcomes. To fulfill a vision of a world free from sexual violence, transformative change is necessary. House File 3682 provides the opportunity to make crucial health improvements for all Minnesotans. A holistic approach to health education is essential to preventing harm and creating safer and thriving communities across the state. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. Next up, members, we had some folks sign up for public testimony. First up is Rebecca Delahunt, Director of Public Policy, Minnesota Family Council. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Chair Youakim and members. My name is Rebecca Delahunt, and I work as the Director of Public Policy with Minnesota Family Council. Health is currently a required subject area in Minnesota schools. In fact, the specific health subject areas listed in this bill under Section 6, Subdivision 2, Parts 1 through 4 are already required subject areas by Minnesota statute. Mental health, Part 5, will also be required, assuming Rep. Hassan's mental health requirement passes as well. Following the required subject areas in the bill are areas that are already encouraged by the state or listed as options in statute. That's subdivision 3 of this bill, and the statutes are included there. With my reading, Rep. Katiza Witoon's bill doesn't add to or remove any of those categorical subject areas right now as the bill stands. The practical change from this bill will be that the overall standards will not be developed locally anymore, but rather will be developed at the state level. Local districts currently develop their own health standards. If we have local schools diverging from uniform guidance of the state, it's likely because parents and local teachers are adapting policies and guidelines. We should have more trust in parents collaborating with local schools to adapt teaching to community input. Unfortunately, the passage of this bill could make school boards less accountable in health education to the specific community that the board serves. We know that Minnesota parents want to be more involved in their kids' education, and certainly health is no exception. This bill removes some decision-making from parents and local teachers who are day in and day out educating the key stakeholders, the students of those districts. Yes, health standards will go through a review process with public comment, but by and large, decision-makers will be centralized, in most cases far away from the school communities who are most impacted. So I respectfully ask for a no vote on HF 3682, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here today. Next up, we have Adane Yudinakachu, and I will eventually get your name right. I am so sorry about that.
That was pretty close.
I still have to listen to you say it. It might take a few more times.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, you and I are no strangers to people pronouncing our names incorrectly as well.
And also having a lot of vowels, so yes. We share that in common as well. As you get settled, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Adonai Yunikacho. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Adonai Yunikacho, and I'm from the Minnesota Youth Council. I come here to bring a youth perspective. I'm from Chaska High School, and I'm in 11th grade. So bringing the youth perspective, I'm looking here at this bill, HF 3682, would help us increase awareness and understanding of health education. Right now, like said earlier, health standards are already required in classes. And so in my 8th grade and 9th grade classes, I was able to take CPR. And until this day, I now know how to do CPR in case situations like this can happen. Another thing that I would like to take into consideration when implementing health education standards is that it's more than just surface level health. It also talks about the diversity of health and exactly how health can be accommodating to different cultures and backgrounds. For example, when talking about mental health, when talking about men's mental health versus women's mental health, those are two different approaches that you have to take. So the implementation of this bill and making sure that Minnesota Youth Council would help with this implementation, we would help in the way that would help students have a more diverse perspective. It will allow different students from different cultures and backgrounds to get a type of curriculum that would be more accommodating to them. Like when talking about the diversity between mental health, when talking about drug use, that looks different between different sections in Minnesota, like in Minneapolis versus in the suburbs. Drug use looks completely different, and using those stats in each school to be able to have a more culturally accommodating health education standards for all students. So this is why I support House File 3682. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your time. Priscilla Mayowa. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and what organization you're with and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Youakim and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Priscilla Mayowa, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Minnesota Youth Council Director. I'm testifying on behalf of the council reps who are not able to be here today. One of the often talked about issues in youth and student spaces is on health and well-being, particularly in the areas of mental health. A lot of young people often do not feel equipped to navigate their mental, emotional, and sometimes physical health by themselves. In schools where they spend significant portions of their lives, they might not be thought or made aware of the tools and skills necessary to take care of their mind, body, and souls. And sometimes they might receive that education, Ultimately, it currently lies in the hands of the school districts. By requiring health standards to be universal in scope and curriculum, we at least are assuring that every young person is getting the fundamental level of health education, including mental health education, healthy relationship education, and cannabis and vaping awareness education. As Senator McQuaid said yesterday, health education is objective, and we need to ensure that all young people in Minnesota are not only well-rounded in their academic pursuits, but they are also living healthy lives. Finally, I want to thank Representative Patissa Watoon on her leadership on this bill, as well as the many organizations and coalitions supporting this work, and for the recognition of youth voice and its inclusion in the rulemaking process that will be implemented for all academic standards moving forward. So I just want to say thank you and urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. With that, members, no other members have signed up to testify, so we'll bring questions to the table for members. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would actually argue that health education is somewhat subjective, not objective. But I just want to point out to the committee that this is another mandate. It's also pulling local control in an area of curriculum, which is in some cases there's differences in, you know, within this. And I think that's probably part of the reason that the majority is trying to take this over and make it a state-run set of you know, what is taught here. But this is a mandate. It is again telling our local administrators, our teachers, our parents that that we, the state, know better than they do what should be taught in subjective area of health. So thank you.
Thank you. I didn't hear a question there, but did you want to comment, Representative?
Nope.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Patissa Watoon, for bringing this forward. And, you know, we were able to hear this first, of course, in policy, and had a great hearing. What was probably one of the most memorable moments is it was also Pediatrician Day on the Hill, and we could not imagine how many pediatricians could get into one building, into one hearing room. So we know that that's where the support is from our health community. And it's hard to tell a pediatrician that what they teach is subjective. So I think that this is an important step forward. I also want to echo something that we heard in the testimony right now, which is that what's happening now when health is not being taught to a comprehensive kind of standard, things that are being left out, the void is being filled. And just as we heard in the policy committee too about phone use and social media right now, prevalence in school, the void's being filled by the internet. So I know you as a parent know what's going on in our schools right now, and I really appreciate kind of the thoughtful way that this is being brought forward in a way that creates a process rather than a quick solution. So thanks for working on this, and again, there's no question, sorry.
Thank you, no problem, Representative. Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Patissa Watoon, for bringing this forward. As a parent of two students in public schools in Minnesota right now, I feel like I don't necessarily have a great sense of what their world is or is going to be. And the change from when I took my health class in high school, I hope it's a different curriculum. It's a different world. When I would knock doors my first campaign, more than 50% of people's concerns, they would say the words mental health. And I think we don't even fully conceptualize what that means. I remember getting a letter from NAMI, actually. I think there's a letter from them in the packet, too, about we don't have to reconstruct a mental health support system. It's never been constructed. And so being able to have a place where we can talk about that with our young people, especially if parents are feeling like they are not equipped to be able to talk about these things, for me, it's a great relief that the school district that I'm in right now, that they will talk about mental health and vaping and bullying and all of these things that are new to me, weren't around when I was a young person. And if we moved school district, they would still get that education because at least me as a parent feel a little adrift in some of these areas. And so I also wanted to say thank you to the student voices who are here and the youth council. They are the experts. They are the ones who are experiencing this, seeing it themselves and their peers and their siblings. And I think that is an incredibly important voice to have at the table as we try to standardize and protect and equip our young people with knowledge about health throughout the state. So I don't have a question, but I wanted to just really give props to the author and especially the youth and the youth voices, because you all know a lot better than all of us here around the table. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. I had a question in ed policy, and I got it answered, so I'm not going to ask that again, save you, Representative Katiza Watoon. But, you know, my question had to, does the state already provide resources for these areas that are required in this bill? And first of all, the areas that are required in this bill are already required to be taught locally. And the state offers many different resources for these areas to school districts, toolkits, guidance, state model policies, and so on, which I think is an ultimate way to go. And I'll say it for this reason. We talk about diversity a lot in this committee and elsewhere, and I think diversity is incredibly important. And anytime you standardize something at the state level or the federal level, you take away diversity. Mm-hmm. The diversity of the choices for local school districts, for parents, for local teachers and administrators to choose what best fits those local students. And in healthcare, obviously, much of healthcare is objective, but much of it is subjective as well in many different areas. When I go to the doctor and have something wrong with me, they make that diagnosis, I am offered by that doctor a number of different treatment thoughts, components. And if I went to a different doctor, I might receive something totally different because it is subjective in how you apply it. And so I really, I just have a lot of heartburn over taking away local control from districts that are using what the state has offered in model policies and making it fit to how it fits best their local students. So I have a very difficult time with this bill, not with the things that we have in it that we want taught in our schools, but the way it's being addressed and saying it's one size fits all, you're going to all do it this way. And that's concerning to me, taking away that local control. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is, have you talked to the Somalian community specifically about these guidelines that you are introducing?
Representative Khadija Batoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have not had a specific conversation with my Somali community members about this bill in specific. I was with a number of my Somali community members last night at a iftar dinner in Eden Prairie, and this is not something that came up, but I am more than welcome to continue conversations with stakeholders of a variety of cultural backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, and we did pulling this language together, we did have conversations with a variety of different stakeholders in the education community, but we haven't opened it up specifically to members of different ethnic communities at this point.
Representative Altenor, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. So more specifically then, is there in your bill the ability to opt out for parents to opt out of this kind of training?
Representative Khadija Batoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is an option currently for parents for any variety of subject matter. So if they feel that they can offer a different or better education for their student in any given topic area, then they are able to not have their student partake in that part of class.
Thank
you. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then my next question would be, what school districts are asking for this to be implemented in the schools? Can you give me a list of the school districts that are asking for this?
Representative Cattisa-Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I don't have a list of specific school districts that are asking for this, but in my consultation with the early childhood and, elementary and secondary administrators, the School Board Association, and a variety of other stakeholders, we're trying to work within a timeline that allows the school districts to implement the things that we passed last year without putting too much of a crunch on them. So when we look at the language, actually, and the technical amendment today had a little bit to do with that, just in terms of how the standards or when the standards will be implemented. The rulemaking process does take time. So nothing that we're talking about today is just going to like snap and happen for next school year. So I think that they were appreciative of a little bit of breathing room, but I certainly understand your point.
Okay. And then Madam Chair, thank you. So thank you so much, and I'm glad to hear that you're still working with these communities. I think it is really a big concern, and I know right now our schools are really struggling with the 65 new mandates that were pushed through last year, in 2023 into law. As we know, they're financially struggling. So I am not hearing from any schools that are asking for another mandate, and certainly not another unfunded mandate to put on them of their list of requests, especially with the, we all know there's a workforce shortage, we all know there's a teacher crisis, and this is just putting another undue pressure on our schools. So I just want to follow up, and I know you said you hadn't talked to the Somalian community yet, but this is a direct quote from Shukri Abderrahman, and sorry if I didn't get that right, but you know, this is a quote from him, because in the last 2-3 years, we are hearing from the Somalian community, you can just look in the news, it's very, very obvious, going to school boards, they do have a lot of concerns about what's being taught in the public schools, and this is a quote from him, not from me. Our Somali community is very concerned for their school children. Public schools are sexualizing our children. Topics being discussed with our children are inappropriate, confusing, and in conflict with our family values and our religious beliefs in the Somalian family. So with Minnesota having the population that we do, I really hope that this is looked at very seriously, and we need to address all people who are coming to the table. This should not be a one-size-fits-all, and this, again, is why I always advocate for local control. They know their community best over the state of Minnesota pushing these mandates on these schools. Let's let the school district decide. We could give them guidelines. I would love to do that, and I'd love to work with you on that. Let's do guidelines. Let's not do mandates.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Just quick comment. The reason it's in finance is because there's money going along with this to implement the standards. So it is being funded in a bill. And then as well, it is, I'm glad you corrected that, the quote, it's the Somali community, not Somalian. But we try to get folks' titles and religions right in this committee. With that, I think I have Representative Vernick on the list next.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few comments, I guess, about the bill, not so much as questions, but I would really like to see the mental health piece added to the requirement component, and I know that is in House File 4363, I believe. But especially as we see more student suicide, substance use, and looking at the student survey, mental health is something that was identified as an issue. I'd also like to see MDH as part of this work group in developing those standards, not just MDE, but they have the adolescent and school health group that I think could be a nice partner. But there are folks at MDH that I think could help in this work. And then, it's establishing a baseline. So that doesn't mean a school district can't go above and beyond that baseline. So that's where your local control can come into play, where you establish the baseline of our health standards. We can always go above and beyond that. And then one final note, if the sports betting gets passed, I would love to see gambling addiction added to that encouraged category, at least, especially when sitting into that hearing, they talked about how there are 6,000, I believe it was 6,000 students identified as having a gambling addiction issue at this point. And so I like this. I think it's heading in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vernick. And I was looking, we kind of have to move on, but I will let two more quick comments. But I was looking for Mr. Uni, and this is why I'm not calling him up either. I will have him put together a whole a handout, a one-pager on how the process works, standards process works, how long it takes, and you can see in the statute how many people have to be at the table to begin with and how they've moved through that process. So I will get that information to the committee. And with that, we have Rose Anderson real quick, and then Representative Jordan, and then we're moving on to final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the chair mentioned that there is that this is not unfunded. That there's from what I read, there is dollars going to the Department of Ed for rulemaking, but there's no money going to the school districts for new curriculum, for new training, for everything that would happen. Is that correct, or are we in an effort to make this a funded mandate? Is there dollars going to the schools to do all of these things that they'd have to do as their curriculums are changing?
Representative Katisa-Batun.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. I think that's a really important point. We don't have anything included in this bill at this time, simply because these standards won't go into effect until potentially the 27, 28, 29 school year. So those are conversations that, as the rulemaking process continues on, we can certainly, you as the committee, can certainly have those conversations and what that looks like to make sure that our school districts get the support that they need in implementing future standards.
Thank you. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Katisa-Batun, for bringing this bill forward. I'm wondering if, I see that MDE will hire one person to do this job in the fiscal note, but that person isn't just coming up with this and saying this is what schools need to do. So I'm wondering if you can maybe make it clear for the committee about how the standards are developed, like maybe starting on like all of the people that are consulted, starting on the page 3 on 3.11 to 3.25. Like, so this is, can you talk about how these people will inform the rulemaking and what will go into this?
Representative Katisa-Batun, maybe you can make that brief and part of your wrap-up, because we will get a standards one-pager from the department as well.
Absolutely. That is helpful, Madam Chair, I think, for the committee in your consideration. So I briefly introduced some of the stakeholders that are required to be involved in this process. And one of the reasons that I think that this rulemaking process is the way to go is simply because, you know, we've heard a lot in our conversation today about different topics and in different viewpoints and cultural viewpoints. I want to thank our student testifiers for pointing out that, you know, different cultures and view things differently and might need a more comprehensive sort of support. So lines 3.11 down through 3.21, and we just actually included the current students with input from the Minnesota Youth Council in education policy. So that was one of the changes that we made in our first amendment there. Will be consulted, and I think that letting the experts weigh in, because certainly, I mean, Representative Verning has experience as a school board member. I know some of our other members on this committee may have past experience as school board members or school principals, Representative Bakeberg, and teachers, and paraprofessionals as yourself, Madam Chair. We all, and as parents, we all have really interesting and unique views and thoughts and experience. And I think that one of the best ways for us to include and make sure that students all across the state are getting the same baseline level of education is including all of those voices into the process, and not for the legislature to say, hey, you should teach about this, and hey, you've got to teach about that, and oh, what about this? Because we are living in a changing world, and I think that in including all of those voices is going to make a really well-rounded set of standards for students from Eden Prairie to St. Paul to Owatonna to Wadena to the Iron Range. And I so appreciate all of your comments and the committee's consideration.
Thank you, Representative Katisa-Batun. And Mr. Uni is here and so graciously offered to come up, but I think we're going to go with the one pager for now and then have folks get him questions if needed. So thank you for bringing this forward. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3682 is amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 3827. Representative Keeler, welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. I will move House File 3827 before the committee. And Representative Keeler, you have a DE1 amendment why don't we put that DE1 amendment on before we go to your opening so we know what we're talking about. So, folks, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The DE1 amendment is adopted. The bill is in the shape the author would like. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. I think this bill is an example of what happens in the committee process. This bill was totally different when it was first developed. It is around addressing attendance. The original bill was to try to ask the department to separate some of the data that we get, understanding that being fiscally sound in this year is important, and seeing that Representative Bakeberg actually had a bill to create a legislative task force in the policy committee. We had that conversation in committee and then followed up on that. And so what this bill actually is doing is paring what we originally thought down to a more sound fiscal note, but it's creating a legislative task force to address attendance. This has been something that I think we all really deeply want to understand. And so what we're trying to do here is involve the agencies, the counties, the school districts, the communities, in a way for us in the interim to really address this issue. By bringing bipartisan efforts, both dual chambers, to the table to have conversations so that hopefully what we can do is streamline some of the work that this committee and the policy committee does, coming back with some honest suggestions for us to move forward in addressing attendance and truancy border to border in our community. I do have some testifiers, if we can move to that. But also, I know Representative Bakeberg's not here, but I do want to give a big shout out to him in being able to work together and find a solution for this. And I didn't mean to steal his bill, but it is sometimes like just a good way to practice bipartisan effort for the state.
Thank you so much, Representative Keeler. With that, we will move to testifiers. And first up, I have a public testifier, Jacob Weston. Once you get settled, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Jake Wessing, and I am a current senior at Washburn High School and a proud member of the Minneapolis Public School District. I am here today to speak in favor of the amendment proposed for House File 3827. But specifically, I am interested in speaking about including student voice as part of the proposed student attendance working group. There is almost no doubt that education is changing, not only in Minnesota, but around the nation. Following the pandemic, I've been able to get a firsthand look on why our education system needs to be more flexible in order to serve the needs of our students in the 21st century. My concern with current attendance policies involves that very rigid structure that fails to incorporate different types of learning and different types of schooling. This rigid structure, for example, can limit students on what is considered an educational activity. For example, an academic competition, like speech and debate, might not be considered a legitimate absence. Yet, at its very core, it is academic in nature and should be classified as such. This proposal would allow us to take a deep look into possible future attendance policies, which will very much benefit if students are allowed to be a part of the process. Involving different district student leadership groups, such as the Citywide Student Leadership Board in Minneapolis Public Schools, or even statewide youth groups like the Minnesota Youth Council, will allow the legislature to get an even deeper contextual understanding on what can change and what can be adapted to for our state's attendance policies. Students are an incredibly important stakeholder in almost all educational policy, and this is no different. I've had the pleasure to interact with incredibly bright and talented students at MPS, and I know that they will bring valuable insight to the table should the opportunity present itself. I am also sure that students from across Minnesota would also jump at the same opportunity. Successfully implementing student opinions into this proposed work group will allow Minnesota to examine how we can build a flexible education that will serve the needs of each and every student in this great state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for being here today. Next up, we have Matt Schaefer. Please settle in, state your name for the record, and what organization you're with.
Chair Uakim, members of the committee, good morning. Happy almost spring break.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3827 as amended. I'm Matt Shaver, Policy Director at Allies. We work to leverage policy to eliminate inequities in education for students. I really want to just take a moment to recognize Rep. Keeler's leadership on the topic of attendance and absenteeism. Rep. Keeler probably didn't have this massive issue on her legislative bingo card before session started, but when presented with the data, she did not hesitate to take this on. She's incorporated stakeholder feedback as well as feedback from colleagues on both sides of the aisle to get here today. There are a number of folks in the House on education committees in both parties, as well as the chairs, who have recognized the urgency of improving consistent attendance. Thank you. Putting together a legislative study group will work to integrate these various efforts and create the time and opportunity to unpack this multidimensional statewide issue that is chronic absenteeism. Some of you have heard from me multiple times now about the millions of collective days of school and nearly 20 million combined hours of instruction Minnesota students missed out on in the most recent school year of data that we have. So here are a couple new data points for you. According to the state's North Star accountability data, there are 128 school districts where more than half of low-income students are chronically absent. There are 99 school districts where more than half of students with disabilities are chronically absent. There are 85 school districts where more than 50% of American Indian students are chronically absent. There are 78 school districts where more than half of all students are chronically absent. About half of all districts have 40% and higher chronic absenteeism rates for low-income students. And finally, there are 406 individual schools in Minnesota where at least half of all students are chronically absent. And if you're shocked or surprised that there are more than 400 schools in the state where more than half of students are not attending regularly, consider this. In the last year before the pandemic started, there were 403 schools where at least half of all students were chronically absent. So while pre-pandemic about 15% of Minnesota students were chronically absent, now it's 30%, it's not like we were getting consistent attendance right as a state in 2019. The pandemic exacerbated those pre-existing conditions of inequity in our schools. These numbers cannot become our norm. Our kids need us to not get comfortable and complacent with or ignore data like this. Legislative study group is a demonstration that our state leaders in both parties are putting their shoulder into grappling with this issue. Our kids need you. Thank you, Representative Keeler and members, for taking action. Thank you all for your time today and your public service to our state.
Thank you for being here today. With that, members, I think we'll bring it to the table. Questions or comments, Representative Anderson?
Thank you. I'll just be quick. Representative Baker is actually texting us too, so he said that he's thank you. So from him and from all of us. So this is very needed. It's not partisan at all, and you know, it's good. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, and I just want to give you a really, really big shout out. This is such an encouraging example to me as a first-time legislator because we have not seen people working together, and you did it. You worked across the aisle because this is a problem that we should all agree on, and we should all be working towards a fix towards it. So, I mean, hugely, thank you.
Thank you. Any other members? See, no. Oh, sorry. Representative Bennett, sorry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I won't say much here, but just thank you, Rep. Keeler. And you know what? This is so important. If we could have the best education we provide ever, but if kids aren't in school or aren't in attendance, then that's of no good. So good bill.
Thank you. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this forward. I know this is an important issue for me, too. I was just reading a story about a family who one of their family members had COVID. It was a pretty, it went through the whole family. One of the parents died. They had a funeral. You know, all these things impacted the student's ability to attend school. And then that student, because he was, you know, grieving, he went to another state to be with some other family members. So all in all, it was like over a month of being absent from school. And I think this pandemic has really affected the way students are able to attend school, not only because they had to stay home because they were sick and they could infect others, but also because, you know, many children have lost caregivers. I think I read about 5,000 of our children have lost primary caregivers through the pandemic. So I look forward to, you know, working with you on this. I think this is a really important topic, and I appreciate you bringing this forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Keeler, final word.
Thank you, Chair and members, and thank you for the comments. I do really think that when we come together and utilize the committee process to fix our bills, I mean, this bill looks very different than my original approach, but I do think it's getting us to an end zone that can be really successful for all Minnesota students, taking in mind I used to be the lady that sat at the front desk of an elementary school when kids would come in late, and I changed tardy signs to "We're glad you're here," because I do think that we really have to make school exciting and interesting for all students, and so we do have to do a deep dive to understand why kids are missing. It's so much bigger than just they don't like school. There's bigger components to that, and I think it's really important for all of our communities, including the student voice. They are the consumer of the education system, and so making sure that they're getting their voices heard is really important to me. So I appreciate the support, Chair and members, in this bill.
Thank you so much, Representative Keeler, for bringing this forward and tackling and this important issue along with Representative Sensenmayer, because it is an issue that is in our schools right now that needs attention. So with that, we will renew the motion to lay of our House 3827 as amended for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. And you're on your way.
Thank you.
Next up, we have House File 3372, Representative Clarkey. Welcome to your committee, Representative Clardy. Would you like to move House File 3372 before the committee?
Yes. So moved.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
So this bill covers EL students. EL students make up the fastest growing and most geographically diverse group in Minnesota. However, the academic outcomes continue to fall behind grade level and state expectations. The capacity to serve EL students is thin in Minnesota, with many districts, particularly rural districts and charter districts, are struggling to hire EL teachers. And as a result, it's questionable whether these students are covered under the U.S. Supreme Court's established civil rights commitment to all students. this bill will take small but important steps to answer some of the capacity challenges that Minnesota faces with EL students. It will establish micro-credentialing pathways for existing teachers and administrators to grow the competency in serving EL students. It also will provide EL students with additional school support personnel in the ALCs, the Area Learning Centers, and it establishes a task force at MDE to inform the legislature of what resources would be needed to fully fund EL programs and ALC programs based on best practices that can provide learners with adequate levels of service to meet our constitutional obligation for students. And I do have a testifier.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to our first testifier. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Nan Yuriko, coordinator of the Race Equity Training Center at Manit. I'm speaking to support the opening up of rulemaking for English learner EL micro-credentialing for administrators, BOSA, and teachers, PELSBY. Micro-credentialing in EL for licensed administrators and teachers would provide opportunities for them to improve their EL-specific capacity, meaning their knowledge, skill, and will, and to increase their EL-specific consciousness, conviction, and commitment to better serve EL students. The BOSA-created rule on an EL micro-credential could support culturally validating pedagogy and leadership and benefit district administrators, principals, program directors, and coordinators in four primary areas. One, instructional leadership, to learn current EL best practices that address environment, instruction, and content, pedagogy. Two, data, to learn how to collect and analyze access and other data in decision-making connected to EL education. Three, relationships to understand the systemic structure and limitations regarding effective communication and engagement with EL students and their families. And four, finance, to learn the current model combining traditional formula with cross subsidies and how EL programs and funds are being used within their organization. The goal would be to build capacity for licensed administrators to better lead, support, and administer EL programs, services, and staff. The Pelsby created rule on EL microcredential would support licensed ESL teachers in gaining greater capacity in core content areas like English, mathematics, science, and social studies. Conversely, the Pelsby created rule would also support licensed core content teachers in gaining greater capacity in the area of ESL. The goal would be to build capacity for EL licensed and core content area licensed teachers to work together to co-plan, co-teach, and co-support English learners in Minnesota schools. I was a principal at schools with large EL populations. And later, as an assistant superintendent in a small district, I inherited the role of EL director. I had no EL background. As a result, I am certain my leadership failed EL students, their families, and staffs, and ultimately contributed to dismal proficiency outcomes and graduation rates that we see today. It was not because I didn't have will or good intentions, but rather I lacked important EL-specific knowledge and skills. This bill is a chance for us to do better by building the capacity of Minnesota educational leaders and teachers to better lead and support EL programs and services at high levels. Please consider action around this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for being here today. Next up, we have Michelle Higgins. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Youakim and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Higgins. I'm the executive director of Rebuilding the Village in St. Paul. I have worked with students of all ages for over 30 years. Having worked in both traditional and non-traditional settings, I've learned that students that have people who believe in them, encourage them, and advocate for them are the ones that succeed. Having someone in the academic setting to help them understand their options can literally be the difference between success and failure. Student support personnel aid to ALCs is critical to ensuring the success of students who are already facing a plethora of unique challenges to completing their education. And without this support, many will never graduate from college. These are smart, motivated students who are often relegated to an inferior status in the academic community simply due to life circumstances. Far too many of our ALC students have already been written off as unsuccessful, failures, or students who will never be college material, and yet quite often are the ones that put forth the most effort into being successful in their academic careers. The largest number of students in ALCs are Black, Indigenous, other people of color, and English learners. These same groups are the lowest number of students participating in dual enrollment options. The PSEO dual enrollment system was put in place as a step to ensure that all students have a chance to earn a college degree. But systems are only effective if they can be accessed. I have heard story after story from students who were not aware that these programs exist, they were told they weren't eligible to participate, or that they were probably not a good fit for the program. The language in this bill will ensure that state-approved alternative programs have the needed resources to support our students having access to the same programs as students in regular education programs. We've put the steps in place. Now let's give our students the banister to help support and guide them as they climb those steps to success. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Kulia Pringle. Please get settled. State your name for the record and the organization you're with.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I am the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union. I am here on behalf of the families we support in the EL community. Minnesota immigrant population is on the rise, and services to support these families in education are underfunded. Districts across the state is facing teacher shortage in general. There is also a major shortage for qualified EL teachers and an increasing student to EL teacher ratio. We are advocating for the micro-credentialing as one solution to a major issue. This would allow for more content area teachers to gain knowledge, skills, and tools to serve EL students. We are also here to support the Legislative Task Force on fully funding EL and ALC programs. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. We didn't have any members of the public sign up to testify. So with that, I think we'll go to the table for members' questions.
Thank you. And if we could maybe have the first testifier come back again, if I can just address one kind of open-ended question that might help us understand.
Thank you, Coordinator Eureka. Rico.
Thanks. Thank you. My question is, we seem to be touching on something that's really essential, this micro-credentialing and what people, they're not the direct teacher, but the people working with the teachers and their subject areas. And you talked about how difficult it was and how, you know, you saw yourself falling short of where we should be and what you're able to do. Could you maybe give us kind of a window in what a person could learn to help them work better with EL students without having the full training, but just that little bit of, you know, having that additional training to make it easier? If you could just kind of give us the kinds of examples that could help us visualize what would be what could be learned to become more effective.
Coordinator Eureka.
So, you know, an example for teachers would be teachers already have background knowledge, right, and specific training in content areas, particularly at the secondary level, and then general pedagogy at the elementary level. So by learning additional skills and increasing their knowledge around specific practices that would target the needs of our English learner and multilingual learners would help enhance their pedagogy, right? So the environment I create for students in my classroom, how I teach that content, which essentially I believe all students benefit from really great pedagogy. As an administrator, you know, to become licensed, I didn't have to have any specific training about the needs of EL learners. And so micro-credentialing would be an opportunity to dive deeper into that, to understand the nuances around serving a population that has specific needs, what I need to do for programming, how I need to administer services, and how I need to support my staff. So for example, if we're gonna have content area teachers and English learner teachers co-teach and co-plan together at the secondary level, then as an administrator, I need to be able to set up those structures in my building and coordinate the resources for them to be able to do that. So for example, they need to be able to have common prep time, right? Common PLC time, so that they can do that work and really collaborate at high levels to serve our students.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Pryor? Representative Sensor Mara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cardi, for all the work that you've done on this. I think, you know, this is a really important issue, and I think I know last year in the budget cycle, we talked a lot about, you know, closing the cross-subsidy and making sure that special education students were getting the funding that they really deserved. And I think I really appreciate that this is kind of adding another layer to that about, like, what is the quality of that education that EL students are currently getting? What does that look like across our state? And how do we make sure that more people in a school building are prepared to give that kind of education. You know, I know that something I've been hearing about in Minneapolis, the district I represent, is, you know, we've had a large influx of newcomer students to the district this year. And so, you know, have talked to some school buildings that are kind of scrambling in terms of, you know, they are having to maybe cut teachers from some area and then bring more EL teachers in. And so schools are kind of in this conundrum where they might end up with the same number of teachers, but the kinds of teachers and the kind of credentials they have might be different. And so my question is, you know, does this bill address, and I don't know if this is also a question for MDE, like how we move teachers who are not currently credentialed in EL to get the credential? So I think that's my first question.
Representative Clardy or Director Yuriko?
I'm going to call on it.
Okay.
Can I do that? Dr. John Peterson?
Yes, please come on down.
While he's coming down, I just wanted to address something. This does cover the legal and the moral obligation to our students that we have. But specifically, we have...
go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Leotawa Dr. John Peterson. I'm a Senior Policy Fellow with the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership, MINEP, by Representative Sensmura. Directly, I would say no, but it does set a big step for folks to consider licensure in an area that they don't currently have. Just to add a little meat to the bone here, micro-credentials are competency-based, they're personalized, they're on-demand, they're in-demand, they're stackable, and they're shareable. That sets a really nice foundation for someone who wants to seek a license. I'm licensed as a Tier 4 teacher in Broadfield Social Studies and Spanish. If I were to get an EL micro-credential, it would set me in a nice position to maybe get an ESL license. In terms of what an EL-specific micro-credential would offer teachers, it would offer differentiation for multilingual learners. It would expose folks to building a foundational understanding of multilingualism, multimodal language and literacy, integrating language and content, family and community engagement, culturally and linguistically responsive assessment, and then also language and society. I also want to add that the micro-credential that we're talking about in this bill, Rep. Clardy's bill, is voluntary. It's not mandatory. So that would be kind of my answer to your question.
Thank you, LaToya, Dr. Peterson. Any follow-up, Representative?
I do just have another question, and this is about the makeup of the task force. I guess my question is, would you consider adding a student to the task force?
Representative Clardy.
Absolutely. We are still doing the language, so that's definitely a crucial component. Thank you.
Any further follow-up? Members, any other questions or comments? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this forward. So I had a really good conversation with a student who had graduated from a local public school in my district. She was, English wasn't her first language, and she really struggled with English. She was told by the school staff that she probably shouldn't join any extracurricular. She should focus on her studies and her English language learning. She shouldn't take a job. And she struggled a lot, and she regrets not being able to do those extracurriculars and not being, you know, encouraged to do that, because she thinks that she probably would have learned a lot of English that way. And then the pandemic happened, and she was sent home with an iPad. And she wasn't, you know, great with English, was having really a lot of trouble with her iPad and, you know, the technology. So I guess I've been thinking about how we need to also be aware of, like, how technology, you know, we need to be able to help our students with technology as well as, like, encourage them, I think, to do the extracurriculars. You know, that's a great way to learn a language. It's not just all something that we learn in a classroom. It's something we learn in after-school activities and hanging out with friends. So just wanted to point that out. I thought it was a really interesting conversation I had with her, and I really regretted that she hadn't had a better experience learning English, and now she's in college and she's doing much better, but I think we can learn from some mistakes that we've made in the past, and just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. Representative Clardy, why don't you wrap it up?
thank you so much for hearing this bill. Whenever I take a bill, I always think about the student first and how it's really going to impact them. And it always takes me back to, you know, what is morally right and what is legally right or legally necessary. And I think this bill accesses both of those, and I would appreciate further consideration of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Flaherty. With that, she'll renew the motion that House File 3372 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. We have our last bill up for the day, House File 1348, Representative Tabke. As you get settled, Representative Tabke, welcome back to the Education Finance Committee, and I will move House File 1348 before us. And then I also see that you have a DE2 amendment, so I'll move that before us as well. And why don't we go ahead and vote on that so it's in the shape that we'd like. Members, all those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The DE2 amendment's adopted. Go ahead, Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Chair Joachim and members. So as you may remember, last year we had discussions about the ESP Bill of Rights for making sure that hourly workers in our schools are paid appropriately, making sure they have access to health care, making sure that they have access to things that we know paraprofessionals and school lunch folks and bus drivers and everyone needs to make sure that they are successful in getting what they need from our school districts. And so we had that bill last year. We were really proud that we got some pieces of that done. First piece is the training piece to make sure that paras and other folks who are working in school are trained appropriately. And so we have that was done last year, and we're going to continue to work on a lot of other pieces. And today we have a DE to the bill that we'd like to get done this year, which has two pieces to it. And the two pieces are, the first is that training that we passed last year. Most schools handled it really, really well, and some schools pushed paras and other folks into training that wasn't appropriate for their position. And so we want to clarify that language in this amendment here to make sure that everyone is getting the training that they need to make sure to be the most successful. And the second piece is paid leave for when school closures happen. So when we have e-learning days and pieces, our teachers and other folks that are salaried get paid for that work, but folks who are hourly do not get paid. So that is all work that is pay that is budgeted, pay that is included already, and we want to make sure that those folks are getting paid and have the ability to get paid for those days as well. And so we're putting that in the bill in this DE2 here that we hope to get passed this year, and I believe we have some testifiers, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. I think we have, first up, we have Chris Stinson.
He's coming.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you. My name's Chris Stinson. I'm the policy director for SEIU Local 284. We represent more than 10,000 education support professionals across the state. I try to have experts come to the table, and so I don't usually like to testify myself, but if you can't tell from the snow outside, it's spring break for a lot of Minnesota schools, and the members who've been working on this bill for many years did not want to zoom in the middle of their time with their families. So you're getting the second string. I wanted to start off by thanking you all for the paid training and e-learning is that work that you did last year. It was really important. Right after the paid training was implemented, we surveyed our paraeducator members about how the paid training went, and 75% of the paras reported that they did receive paid training, and that is not necessarily evidence of non-compliance. The Department of Education interpreted the training requirement that you passed last year to only apply to instructional paras, and our database doesn't make a distinction. If you're in the para contract, you're a para, and so I suspect that those 25% of people that didn't receive training were non-instructional paras. So of the people who were trained, 15% reported that they got 6 hours of training that was specific to the work that they do every day. About 40% reported that they got a more general training. Usually that meant being in kind of the same auditorium as the teachers when they were doing their back-to-school training. And then 45% received a combination of both, some general training and some that was really specific to their job. And so we followed up with the 15% of people that got a really good training and tried to figure out what the difference was. And it was really simple. In the districts where the paras got great training, the district consulted with veteran paras about what they needed to be part of that training. And so at SEIU, we call our elected leaders in the different bargaining units stewards. Education Minnesota calls them presidents. But either way, if a district talked to those elected leaders before designing the training was better. So that's the first part of the DE. The second part just says that if districts are paid for the day, that they need to pay their workers. And many of you know that my mom was a para, and that's the reason that I do this work. I'll just say that by the end of most months, well, the money ran out before the month was over. And so by the end of the month, we were often eating the 20-cent ramen noodle packets and peanut butter and jelly. And so I can imagine you looking at a concern about making sure that the school workers are paid for the two-hour late start days and think that that's only $30 or $40. But $30 or $40 still buys a lot of peanut butter. And for a lot of our members, that $30 or $40 is the difference between being able to feed their families and not. And so this change, while it is not a lot of money, is incredibly impactful in the lives of our members. So thank you for your work last session and your continued work on this bill. I appreciate it.
Thank you. With that, members, I'll bring it to the table for any questions. Representative Clardy.
It's more of a comment than a question. Thank you for bringing this forward. As a teacher, I couldn't have done my job without a qualified para, and sometimes I'd kind of wonder, like, why they were expected to do things without pay, whether, you know, and they're working side by side with me. So this is an important bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Sorry, I just have a quick question. Maybe it's from Mr. Strom, but so the finances on this, I'm not really following that. That's coming from the school then? I just wanted to be clear on that.
Representative Tapke first, and then I'll pitch it to Mr. Strom if needed.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair and Representative Altendorf. So yes, that's a really great question. So this the paid leave is what is already happening as the schools are getting paid for those days. If it's an instructional day, the school district gets paid for those days. It's not something that is just left out. So that money is already rolling to the school district for those days. And a lot of times the hourly workers are not, not a lot of times, but they are not paid for those days. We want to make sure that they continue to get paid for those days when the school is getting paid. So there's no additional money, no anything else that comes that way.
Thank you for that clarification.
Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a question. If the hourly worker is at home because of snow day and they're going to get paid, are the schools able to still have them do work in some way? Like lots of them work individually with kids. Can they? Is a school allowed to tell without like revisiting a collective bargaining agreement or something like that? Is allowed to be like, well, why don't you give these parents a call, talk about their students, maybe work on something while you're not here.
Representative Tapke.
Yeah, Chair Yukim and Representative West, yes, they are able. So if you look online 1.13, school employees may be allowed to work from home to the extent practicable. And so that is that they are still able to work. So if someone is able to work from home, or if someone needs to come in for, if they are doing before and after school childcare and different things like that, that yes, they are absolutely able to, the school is able to require them to come in and be on those days. And so if someone were to not want to come in, then they would not get paid for those days.
Representative West, did you have a follow-up? Okay, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tapke, for working on this bill and for listening to our hourly school workers. One question I had, I think it's really interesting, and I think we generally learn best when we ask people who are doing the work. what they need. I don't know, this might be a question for our labor partners or whatever, but it would be actually really interesting to hear and sort of to learn what those paras are saying they need in terms of training. I really like this bill. I think that having some of that and just learning more about what our professionals need. I don't know if that information is available, but it would be interesting and important to learn. So thank you.
Mr. Stinson, do you want to just provide some follow-up? Or you can. It's okay. We have a few minutes. We'll let Mr. Stinson come down, and then I have one more person on the list, Representative Burnett. So, Mr. Stinson, briefly, thank you.
Getting
your exercise.
So, yeah, as part of the...
state your name for the record.
Chris Stinson, like I said, I don't try to come to the table very often. Chris Stinson with SEIU Local 284. As part of the survey that we did following the first year of the training, we did ask the members in kind of an open-ended way what kind of training they wanted, and it was a wide range. There were a lot of folks who were new, who wanted more training about the personnel handbook and how they were supposed to kind of function just within the new environment. And then, but the vast majority of it was around behavior. Ever since the pandemic and the lockdowns, student behavior has become more challenging. And there are fewer caring adults in the building to help address those behavior issues. And so it makes every single person's job that much harder. And what they want is more training and support to help when it's on them to intervene. And frankly, that's also the reason why the underlying bill had training for a bunch of other areas too, because you all know that the only place where behavior challenges occur is not the classroom. It happens on the bus and in the lunchroom and in the hallways. And so every caring adult in the building needs to know how to intervene and support students.
Thank you. As a para too, that would be my number one, was just that de-escalation training and how to meet the student where they're at is a big part of that. And phrase that we use a lot in education is Q-tip, quit taking it personally. It's not about you, it's about the student in front of you. But sometimes it takes a bit to learn how to do that. I had Representative Anderson and then Vernig, and then we're going to wrap it up.
Thank you. Just a question of our fiscal staff. So there, right now, before this bill, the schools don't have to pay, obviously, wages if they're not working. Do we have any sort of, under this bill they would, so, and there's no dollars coming with this, is that correct?
I will pitch it to Mr. Strunk.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that's correct. There's two types of days to distinguish. Last year the change was made to the e-learning days, mm-hmm. and on those days when the school there's a process to go through for establishing those days. And when those days are established, if an e-learning day is scheduled, then there's a requirement that the pay goes out. So current law requires that on an e-learning day. There can be other circumstances where an instructional day is on the district's calendar, and for whatever reason that day does not go off as an instructional day. So perhaps a pipe breaks or something like that, or something not otherwise covered by an e-learning day. Those, in terms of the district's revenue, there's no additional revenue for the district if a day like that is added or canceled. The school districts are paid on the basis of them meeting the hourly requirement in statute, and the and essentially there's not a diminution in revenue for school districts as they serve fewer days. We used to have a system in Minnesota where there were where the aid paid was dependent on the number of days. That's no longer the case. So some school districts may have a calendar of 178 days, and others may have a calendar of 175 days. The boards adopt those calendars. In both those situations, the school district is going to get the exact same yearly amount of money for the students served. So if the school district with 178 days in its calendar cancels a day that's not an e-learning day, they're not getting a diminution in their revenue for that day. they would go 100, under current law, they go 177 days, they'd still get the same amount of revenue. Mm-hmm. There's two little revenue sources, primarily the extended time revenue that matters for the hourly requirement. But otherwise, there's no change in the school district revenue, and those calendars vary. So the school district's not getting any additional funding under the requirements of Representative Tapke's DE amendment, but the school district is not losing any money either if it chooses to go a day less than its calendar days, provided it meets the hourly requirements in statute.
Representative Anderson Follett.
Thank you. So that would be, it's a choice, but either way, this is a cost that they don't have to bear currently.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. Yes, right now, if a day that is would be covered by the DE2 amendment happened, and the school district said they weren't going to pay their hourly workers for that day, then the school district would save the pay for the hourly workers for that day. Under this bill, they would no longer do that if it met the criteria for instructional day in the DE2 amendment.
One quick follow-up, then I'm going to go to Representative Tapke on that, then Vernig, and then follow up, and then close. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. So this is another unfunded mandate that costs the school districts money. Do we have any way of looking at past history to see how much this would cost our schools? Do we have any way to look at, days that there were closures, or because this is a this is another unfunded mandate.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Yukim, and Representative Anderson. So I do not believe that's an accurate characterization of it as an unfunded mandate. What this is saying is that schools are getting paid for the instructional day. The money is flowing for the instructional day, and right now they are not paying the hourly workers when they are getting that money. And so it is basically just not paying the lowest wage workers in the school district. And so what this is saying is that everybody needs to get paid for instructional days when the school district is paying. So this is money they've already got budgeted. This is money that's already coming into them, and it's making sure that everybody gets paid for the days that they are working.
Then I really
need to follow up. Yeah, it's okay, because we very much disagree on the math here, so.
Thank you, Representative Frank.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing this forward. As somebody who served on my community ed advisory council, the number one thing I heard from parents was consistency in staffing. So a consistent bus driver makes a world of difference for a special ed student trying to get to school. A consistent para, consistent staffing is important. So I hope that this will help with employee retention, with consistency, and with student success.
Representative Tapke. Oh, there's no question there. Got it. I just want to actually jump back one quick question to lines 1.12. And maybe just because I have a husband that's very infrequently had snow days, but all you're saying, and they do this with the teachers too, even on a snow day, teachers, if they can get into the building, are asked to come in because districts are already getting paid for that duty day. And what we're saying is you're getting paid for the duty day, but what you don't get to do is then book some savings because you've chosen to pick and choose who has to come in. Representative Tapke, is that accurate?
That is.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Why don't we do? Why don't you do a quick closing, and then we'll move on.
Thank you very much for hearing this. I really appreciate it. And so this is, as to piggyback on what Representative Burdick said, is that this is, paras are critical. Lunch workers are critical. Bus drivers are critical in our in the work that gets done every day in a school. My wife is a high school teacher, and it is really, really important that we have consistency and that we are able to have good, reliable income for all these folks in order to keep them in the jobs for long term. And so this will help build on that and make sure that they are trained the way it is necessary to make sure that they're as successful as possible and make sure that they're paid appropriately for days that the district is getting paid. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. And with that, I'll renew the motion that House File 1348 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, or an education finance bill. Man, I'm off today. Reminder, folks, the break for the holiday starts tonight at 5, and that we don't come back again until Tuesday at noon. So we will not be having committee on Tuesday. So next week we'll be having committee on Wednesday and Thursday. With that, members, good break, and we're adjourned.